Uncertainty isn't just a challenge, it's a call to adapt. At Tagoras, we help organizations navigate disruption with clarity and confidence. Whether it's making smarter decisions about your portfolio, understanding shifting market dynamics, or identifying new opportunities for growth, we bring deep experience in strategy, market assessment, and lifelong learning. If you're looking to build a more resilient, responsive learning business, we're here to help. Learn more at tagoras.com/clarity.
Hudagogy might be the most important and powerful idea in learning that you've never heard us mention until today.
I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast. If you've tuned in before, odds are pretty good that you've heard us talk about andragogy.
And odds are pretty good that you've also heard us talk about self-directed learning.
But we are absolutely 100% sure you have never heard us talk about hudagogy. And that's a gap we want to address in today's episode number 427.
Because despite our lack of use of the term hitherto, we are proponents of and believers of hudagogy.
And we want to make sure that you are going to be a believer too. So let's dig into this term and figure out what hudagogy is. And Salisa, you were the one who uncovered this gem for us.
Well, it's a term that was coined by Stuart Hayes and Chris Kenyon, and it was used in an article that they published in 2000. And that article was called From Andragogy to Hudagogy. And they define in that article hudagogy as the study of self-determined learning.
And I think, as that title suggests, the authors are definitely building on the work of Malcolm Knowles and crediting him with the shift in 1970 away from pedagogy, which has that kid focus, to andragogy, which is for adult learners.
So why hudagogy? There's sort of a cynical view of that, which is just that, you know, hey, a new word gets attention. You coin a new word and that's going to help you get out there and get your article published. That's sort of the cynical take on it.
And it's, you know, it's an important thing to do if you are a researching academic sort. You have that whole publish to perish hanging over you. But I think we can take a little bit more generous view and say, basically what Hayes and Kenyon say is that while andragogy was a good step, it just wasn't far enough. It's still too focused on a teacher-student relationship and too grounded in a reality that's really no longer true. I mean, you can think about how much the world has changed or had changed since Knowles published The Modern Practice of Adult Education, Andragogy versus Pedagogy in 1970.
Right. So you have Knowles publishing The Modern Practice of Adult Education, 1970. Hayes and Kenyon, it's 2000, so 30 years later, where they're publishing their From Andragogy to Hudagogy. And as you said, you know, a lot changed in those 30 years. Well, it's been not quite 30 years since Hayes and Kenyon put out their article, but here we are in 2024, so it's been 24 years, and we can think about how much has changed even since 2000. COVID, generative AI, the decline in the trust of expertise. Those are just a few that I can tick off fairly readily about things that have changed in the world in which we work and live.
And I mean, and even before that, in 2000, you know, what had happened with technology since Knowles was writing, a lifespan, what work and jobs and careers looked like even then, and certainly what they look like now. Just a lot had changed since this initial idea of andragogy was put out there.
And so in short, I think that we believe that Hayes and Kenyon were really onto something with this idea of let's kind of move beyond andragogy and we'll go along with what they call it, the hudagogy. And one of the things that they point out is given all that's changed and given just the pace of change and that accelerating pace of change is that andragogy is still probably too focused on formal learning. And Hayes and Kenyon point to what they call the value of everyday unorganized experiences and the process of reflection. That's what we might call informal learning.
Yeah. And Hayes and Kenyon say that hudagogy looks to the future. That's a future in which knowing how to learn will be a fundamental skill given the pace of innovation and the changing structures of communities and workplaces. And I mean, I can hear echoes in that of like Alvin Toffler, of like Peter Drucker. I mean, people have been thinking about this type of thing before, but, you know, Hayes and Kenyon sort of formalized that a bit.
Yeah. And I think that part of what they're doing in their formulation of Hudagogy is that it really is forefronting learners' motivation and effort and ability. And it really sort of downplays the teacher or the instructor and possibly even maybe, you know, the learning business, right? If it's less important what's going on in a formal sense, and a lot of learning businesses are really focused on creating and delivering what falls under that formal learning umbrella, courses and seminars and conferences, it to some extent perhaps threatens, you know, what a learning business does, or maybe not.
Yeah, and we've, you know, raised this possibility before, and I think we'll definitely can talk about it more in this episode. But, you know, if you think about it in the extreme, we really can't ever teach others. It really comes down to the learner in the end. And we've talked before about concepts of learner responsibility and just, you know, what the behavior, what the motivation of the learner has to be if learning is actually going to happen. And really, you know, what a teacher can do and what a learning business can help to facilitate through providing structure and instructors and that sort of thing is stimulate and encourage others to learn.
Yeah. And I think as we've already begun to allude to in our conversation so far, really, Hudagogy is a new name, an umbrella term for a lot of other ideas floating around. And Hayes and Kenyon do give due to some of those other ideas that they're building off of when they formulate Hudagogy. So it's things like systems thinking and organizational learning and learner-managed learning and action learning and work-based learning. There are a lot of these various trends that they sort of believe are sort of tributaries flowing into the way that they describe and define Hudagogy.
Yeah, the classic, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants sort of thing and taking some of this thinking and, again, putting some structure, putting some formalization around it. And, of course, you know, Hudagogy does build on andragogy. I'll dip into a little bit of what they say about that in the paper. You know, they say that Knowles's definition of self-directed learning really provides a linear approach to learning and sounds like the chapters of a train, the trainer guide. I mean, very, very much rooted in traditional concepts of training and education. On the other hand, Hudagogy takes account of intuition and those concepts like double loop learning, Chris Argyris, and things that are not linear and not necessarily planned.
Yeah, and it may be that a person doesn't even necessarily identify a learning need per se. They might not be super clear on what their learning need is, but they can identify the potential to learn from a novel experience. And so again, this is this idea of you really want to have learning that is as adaptable and applicable in as many situations as possible. And that's really where Hudagogy is focusing, and that as they describe it, they being Hayes and Kenyon in this article, they talk about it as including aspects of capability and action learning processes like reflection, environmental scanning as is understood in systems theory, and really valuing experience and interaction with others. And so in essence, Hudagogy goes beyond problem solving because it enables productivity, or actually proactivity is what they say, not productivity, but both I think are actually true. But it really is this focus on what can be done with learning, which may actually be kind of greater than any sort of learning objectives anyone might ascribe to a particular course.
Yeah. And for me, and I don't know that their language necessarily mirrors this, this may be sort of my adding my own gloss on it, but I'm, you know, thinking about proactivity and thinking about how they're treating learning. You know, we've talked before about, you know, a great deal of learning can be unconscious. A great deal of learning doesn't necessarily have intentionality behind it. And I think this is just another one of those approaches that gives us some language and some tools for helping to raise things to consciousness, helping to raise things to intentionality. And potentially, this is a point of leverage that we can use in engaging with our learners and helping them understand themselves as learners better and how they can learn better even when they're not in that classroom or that conference situation. I think we all box ourselves in so much and see ourselves as not really learning unless we're in those formal learning structures. And this is an approach that says, no, you know, yes, you're learning in those structures, obviously, but there's so much that they can happen on a self-directed basis. At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more.
And so all of this points to a potential opportunity for learning businesses, a potential hoodagogical opportunity.
Hoodagogical opportunity.
For learning businesses.
You heard it here first.
And so I think just as you were describing, Jeff, if a learning business can really support learners in being self-directed, I think there's a lot of potential opportunity there because that very much could distinguish you from other learning providers that really are just, you know, providing the course or the conference or kind of that construct, but aren't really necessarily helping to develop your capability to learn.
Yeah, I mean, I think that really truly learner-centric approach is a real fit for many learning businesses. I mean, associations, of course, have their memberships, their communities, and sort of thinking about people operating and learning within that community, not so much within a classroom or a conference per se, and thinking about how you can leverage that. You know, even if you're in an academic continuing education unit, you've got a little more latitude, a little more freedom than you do if you're within the confines of that, you know, accredited degree path structure that the rest of the institution has to operate within. So how do you take advantage of that and start being that sort of facilitative structure around the learning needs of your learners that they can potentially take hold of themselves and direct themselves in?
And we've talked about developing pathways and trying to help smooth the path for your mm-hmm. learners by making it clear what a next step might be. And all of that is great. And we do really believe that is a value that a learning business can provide. But this is really about going beyond pathways. This is really about how do you help someone almost sort of create their own pathway, which might be something that you never imagined. But again, you're helping to facilitate and equip them with the skills that are going to actually allow them to identify what is the right pathway for me and figure out how to get where they would like to be.
Yeah, I think there's a comparison to sort of how creativity works in here that you'll often hear that creativity and innovation work best within constraints. You sort of provide a framework within which people can operate, but then they're sort of driving the bus, but you're also sort of providing them with kind of a launch pad because they get used to being creative within these structures and can ultimately, you know, Picasso goes from being the sort of classic painter to, well, being what he's known for today. And I can think of an analogy in learning, you know, we need to set these guardrails up, pathways are valuable, but then how are we empowering people to go off the path and go where they need to go with their learning?
And one point that I find particularly interesting from the Hayes and Kenyon article is that they really focus on capacity. And so again, if we think about pathways and certifications, I mean, they're arguing that it's really not about competency, it's about capacity. And so this is a quote from their article, "Capable people are those who know how to learn, are creative, have a high degree of self-efficacy, can apply competencies in novel as well as familiar situations, and can work well with others. In comparison with competencies, which consist of knowledge and skills, capability is a holistic attribute. Developing capable people requires innovative approaches to learning consistent with the concept of hoodagogy."
Yeah, I like that. We have an article that's quite a while back, but it's still one of the most popular articles on the our Mission to Learn site that's about 15 ways of the self-directed learner. And a lot of this language from Hayes and Kenyon reflects that as similar sort of language. And what are the attitudes and the behaviors of that sort of learner? And then again, back to learning businesses, how can we help people unlock those and actualize them?
And I think that one of the challenges in unlocking that will be a willingness to relinquish some control and some mm-hmm. power, right? If the idea is about really letting that learner be self-directed, I mean, that means you don't really know where they're going. You don't really know what they're going to do with the materials that you put out there. And so it's a little bit at odds with the way so many organizations are created, right? We want to have a little bit of control and maybe even some power and say in what people are going to do and how they're going to make use of our products and services. And this suggests that we might have to let go of that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't lend itself very well to, you know, smile sheets or standard approaches to assessment or certification. This is fertile ground for talking about how we might use some alternative approaches to those things. How will we measure impact if this is the sort of environment that we're supporting for our learners? And I don't think that's impossible. I mean, I think there are valid ways to do that, but it is going to require learning business leaders to think a bit differently.
And I think we've been focused a lot on the idea of personalized learning. What can we do to get there? I think this, again, takes it one step further. This is individualized learning. I mean, it is that individual learner getting to say, okay, this is what and how I learn.
Pedagogy might be the most important and powerful idea in learning that you've never heard us mention until today. If your learning business embraces pedagogy, it will be well positioned to lead learning in the field, industry, or profession you serve because you'll have enlisted the help of all your learners.
At leadinglearning.com/episode427, you'll find show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe.
And we'd be grateful if you would take a minute to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. Salise and I personally appreciate those reviews and ratings, and they help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning. You can do that in a one-on-one conversation or an email to a colleague, or you can do it through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode427, you'll find links to connect with us on LinkedIn, X, and Facebook.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast. Yeah.